Welcome to the Chrissy Crash Podcast. I'm Chrissy Crash, a former smoker, drinker, fast food eater, unhappy bartender, transformed into a roller derby athlete, runner, and fitness coach. Each week, I'll bring you an insightful guest or lesson learned from my own perfectly imperfect life to help you uncover how to create more love, light, joy, and health in your everyday experience despite the chaos and challenges. I believe that life is a contact sport. Let the games begin. This episode of the Chrissy Crash Podcast is brought to you by A Crash Course in Transformation. If you want to get fitter, faster, stronger, leaner, happier, more organized, and just have a super badass life, then A Crash Course in Transformation is for you. Through customized workouts, nutrition education, one-on-one coaching, and a badass community, we help you create the life that you love and get on the path to sustainable living in just 12 weeks. Click the link in the show notes to join us or go to chrissycrash.com. What's up, everybody? Chrissy Crash here. Welcome to the newest episode of the Chrissy Crash Podcast. I am here with Haley Shapley, who is a writer, editor for the last 15 years, primarily magazines and websites. And I, you guys, just finished reading Haley's first book, and it was fucking awesome. And so I'm excited to have her on because we have some super dope stuff to talk about. So she wrote a book called Strong Like Her, which was Haley, this book was absolutely mind-blowing to me, first of all, because like I sat down to start reading it and it sounded like, oh, cool, you know, sort of like the history of like the evolution of like women and fitness and all these things. But I was just like so blown away by how recent so much of this stuff was. And it really had me realize, like, as a woman and a female athlete, how much I've taken for granted, how many women very recently in the past didn't have the same opportunities that we've had because of the work that these women have done. So I'm excited to have you on, and I'm excited for us to chat about this. So first things first, can you just kind of maybe just share a little bit about yourself, sort of your evolution as a writer, how we ended up in this space with this dope book?
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you so much for having me. And for reading the book. As you mentioned, I am a writer. I've been a writer for my entire career. And I was really looking for a project that I could sink my teeth into. And this one kind of just found me because it was a combination of both my personal and professional interests. I grew up playing sports. I've always loved being athletic. But I had never really wanted to be stronger when I was younger. I played basketball and I swam and I ran track and I played tennis. And, I did all of these different activities, but I didn't spend a lot of time in a weight room. I didn't want to be bigger. That was definitely something that I shied away from. And I found my attitudes toward that changing a few years ago when I started strength training for the first time. And when I picked up a barbell, I was like, this is really cool. This is amazing. Like, I feel empowered doing this. Why was this something I hadn't wanted to do before? Mm-hmm. And as I got more into the strength training world, I found that my ideas about my own body and what I was capable of and what I wanted it to look like were changing. And so I signed up for a bodybuilding show as a challenge to myself because I had been doing challenges for a few years where I ran a marathon, I climbed Mount Rainier in Washington State, nice. I rode my bike from Seattle to Portland, 206 miles. And so I thought, I want to do something a little bit more outside my comfort zone, but that still requires this kind of dedication to training. And so bodybuilding turned out to be it. And the way that people reacted to me ended up being one of the most interesting aspects. So a lot of people said things like, don't get too big because men don't like that. Don't hurt yourself by lifting too heavy. Don't change your body in a way that won't be pleasing. And I was really surprised by this. And also a lot of the commentary was about my relationship with men. Some people said things like, how will you date? You know, you won't have time, or men, this isn't what men want. Or on the other hand, some people would say, wow, men must really like you now. You must be super appealing. But whatever the commentary, it was all about how I was relating to the opposite sex. And I just thought that that was so strange, because why would I choose my hobbies based off of, you know, my dating life, I guess. So I thought it was really interesting how we still contextualize women's choices in terms of their marriage prospects. and so I started to just do some research. I wanted to know how we've viewed strong women over time. I knew I wasn't the first person to pick up a barbell, of course. Women have been strong forever. And so I wanted to learn more about it. And I discovered that there was not a lot of material out there on the history of fitness as it related to women, particularly when it came to strength. So I saw this opening to do something really cool and different that hadn't been done before, and to spotlight these women you mentioned who have really paved the way for us today to be able to participate in a much wider array of sports and activities than we had access to just years ago.
Yeah, it's so crazy. And first of all, I just want to say, by the way, we're the same person. I literally did the STP when I was 11.
Oh, nice.
The Seattle to Portland bike ride. I ran a marathon as a challenge and also competed in a bikini competition. And so I'm like giggling as you're talking. I'm like, oh, so basically we're the same person. It's fine. That's so
good. Well, now I'll know what I'll do next based off of what you've done. Yeah, so this is good.
Surfing, come on down to Costa Rica, sell everything you own.
Okay. I have surfed in Costa Rica. So yeah. There you go.
Oh my God. So crazy.
But that's where I learned. Yeah.
You know, and it's so interesting what you said about how we, in general, we contextualize our choices based off of like marriage prospects. And it's such an underlying theme of that we don't even realize is there. And I actually went through it a lot being tall, right? Like I'm 6'1". And so my whole life I've grown up with like, oh, is it so hard to date? And what's it like dating a guy that's shorter than you? Like, it must be so hard to have, you know, guys that are interested. And it's so fascinating that like, even in this day and age when, you know, women are starting to make more money than men, and we're starting to have these amazing careers, and we're just strong and we're powerful and we lift and we're athletes. And yet still we're like reduced down to like, well, how are you going to find a mate?
Right.
You know, it's so crazy. And the book was, dude, the book was mind blowing. And like you said, like, I did not realize like how recently, I mean, what year was it that women were finally allowed to run in marathons?
Officially in the Boston Marathon was 1972.
Yeah. I mean, it hasn't even been that long, and it's insane. You know,
yeah, it wasn't added to the Olympics until 1984. So, I mean, weightlifting wasn't in the Olympics for women until 2000 in Sydney. So that's, you know, this century.
It's so mind blowing. What did you, when you were writing the book, what were the things, were there any sort of standout things that you, I know reading your book, there were things where I was like, oh my God, but like in the research, were there things where you were like, no way. Like this can't possibly be real or true.
You know, I did not get surprised by very much while I was researching the book, because I had gotten used to reading some pretty ridiculous things.
Yeah.
I think one thing that I thought was really interesting was in the 1890s, the bicycle became popular for both men and women, because there had been a lot of, you know, there'd been development to make it safer, and it started to look much like it does today. And so before that, bicycles had been really kind of dangerous. They were either very tall and you had to know how to flip off of one without landing on your head, or they had pedals that didn't really turn. And so they were something that, you know, only kind of daredevils would ride. But in the 1890s, they became accessible to a large number of people, and they became easier and safer to ride. And so we see this bicycle boom, and women start riding. And this is exciting. Like, they're getting some independence, and they can go meet with friends without having a chaperone. Yes. They can get some fresh air and start to feel what it feels like to, to get some physical activity. And not everyone loved this. And so one of the arguments that people used to try to get women to stop riding a bicycle was to tell them that they would get bicycle face, which was this unseemly condition in which your eyes would clench and your jaw your eyes would bulge and your jaw would clench forever. And this is not something that ever happened. As far as I know, I tried to find a picture of it somewhere, like, or an illustration that someone had made at some point, but I could never find a visual representation of what this bicycle face looked like. But women were warned against it and told that they would, they developed this condition, so they better not ride a bike. And that was just one of the ways they tried to keep women contained.
Yeah. And I kind of picture bicycle face looking like Smithers in The Simpsons. You know what I mean? With like those big giant, like, bulging eyes and his weird like upper lip. And like, I just picture that guy by riding a bike to me is what bicycle face would look like. So
good. Yes. Well, fortunately, bicycle face is not a thing, so we can all ride a bike without concern about our jaws clenching forever.
Yep. And the one that I thought was really interesting was that women were warned not to run more than like a half a mile because their uterus might fall out.
Right. Yes. That's another favorite of mine. And that is a myth that has persisted for a really long time. So I interviewed Catherine Switzer in the book. She is a runner. She ran the Boston Marathon in 1967 as an official entrant. And she was the first woman to do so. She was able to do so because she used her initials on the form, and she wasn't trying to circumvent the system. She just used her initials a lot because it had been her byline when she was a sports journalist for her school paper. And at the time, the longest allowable distance for women to run in sanctioned athletic competition was a mile and a half. And she was told when she ran that her uterus might fall out, she might grow hair on her face, her voice might get deeper. All of these very strange things that now we think, well, running seems like this non-controversial activity. And yet this was not that long ago. This is in our parents, my parents' lifetime, yeah. My grandparents' lifetime. So there were a lot of myths out there about women and running.
It's so crazy. You guys, literally, you have to read this book. I like plowed through it in probably like 3 days because I was just, I couldn't get enough of it. And I just like, literally every like 20 minutes, I was like laughing out loud. Like, there's no possible way. Like, this can't even be like how we've reflected on women. And I feel like the way that women have been, viewed or not viewed inside of fitness is just such a perfect like microclimate for how we've been like treated in every other area,
Absolutely. Put that, that I think is, even more recent, but just 10 years ago, there was a ski jumping official that told, that did an interview saying that women's uteruses might burst if they were allowed to ski jump. And ski jumping wasn't allowed for women in the Olympics until 2014. So I think sometimes we think these issues are really far in the past, and they're not. And women are good ski jumpers because it helps to be light in the air when you're ski jumping, and women tend to, on average, be lighter than men. Yeah. So if you think this is something that's only happened in the past, we still have a lot of these ideas, and they show up in different ways today, but they still show up.
Yeah. Yeah. Where do you think they're still showing up now? Like, where do you think we still have to go?
I think we still have, I have a chapter kind of about modern day in the book, and the main issues I cover there are in terms of equitable compensation for female athletes and fair sponsorship to men, you know, on average have more muscle, which does allow for skills like strength and skills out there. And going back to Catherine Switzer, the marathon runner, she thinks that in the future there might be sports that we don't even know about today that haven't been invented yet that might put more emphasis on things like balance and agility and endurance. And those are areas where women often excel. And women can excel at strength and speed and power as well. But for a long time, we've been told those aren't our domains. So I think we see in sports like CrossFit, where from the very beginning at the CrossFit Games, women and men have gotten the same amount of prize money. They get the same amount of airtime. They do the same events.
Yep.
And so you don't see as much of a divide there as you do in sports where they started out on an unequal footing. And so it seems preposterous to us that women basketball players should be paid as much as men who play basketball. But why is that preposterous? I think if women had been allowed to play basketball at a high level from the beginning, then we wouldn't see the skill gap or just the idea that it's not as entertaining to watch women. And I do actually talk about basketball in the book. I just threw that out as an example, but women did have the opportunity to play basketball from pretty soon after it was invented, but it was a modified game. They mm-hmm. didn't play a full court game. It was half court. They had different rules that emphasized cooperation and not stealing the ball. And, you know, they could only dribble a certain number of times before they had to pass. And they didn't get an opportunity to play a full court game on a collegiate level until the 1970s. So that's their men had many more decades to get better at basketball, and women are, you know, still catching up in some ways.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. And CrossFit for me was actually my first experience of real, actual, like, strength training, like strength as a sport, strength as really like something that was honored in being a woman. And I really feel like CrossFit has been such a huge piece for a lot of women in terms of even just bringing into mainstream fitness, like the normalizing of women in strength training.
Absolutely. I think CrossFit does deserve a lot of credit for that. And we see that there are more women than ever powerlifting mm-hmm. and weightlifting and competing in strong woman competitions. And I think that is a direct result of exposure via CrossFit. And then women then start to specialize a little bit more and get interested in these different sports. But CrossFit is the first place a lot of people learn how to deadlift or how to back squat or to do some of these different lifts. And it is really a pretty close to 50-50 mix of men and women who participate. So you see, you know, just women having the opportunity to lift weights, having that exposure for often the first time.
Yeah. I love seeing women in CrossFit, like going into a CrossFit class and just watching some of these women throw down. Like my favorite thing ever, as I remember, I first started at CrossFit HB in Huntington Beach. There was this pregnant woman that would go there. And it was just so funny because, I mean, this chick was like doing pull-ups, she was doing squats. And it was like, it was so cool to see this woman who is not only like creating human life, but at the same time, she's like squatting more than like half the dudes in the class.
Yes. Yeah, it's amazing. And so many women start to participate in something like CrossFit, or, you know, they go to some other kind of strength training gym or program, and they realize, I'm good at this and I never knew. Like, I have this hidden talent that I didn't know about, or I can progress so quickly with just some effort and some goals. And it's like this thing that they've never explored before. So they had no idea. Yeah. And it's amazing. There, I talk about a woman in the book, Leifa Ingalls, who is a very well-known and strong woman competitor and extremely strong. And she just kind of didn't know she was really strong until she started to train with some intention. And what a revelation to come upon that you can lift these incredible amounts of weight. It's a super empowering thing.
Yeah, and it's such a, it's, you know, like for me, so I run a program called Crash Course, and we have a 12-week program called Crash Course in Transformation. I basically teach women how to be athletes, like whether they are coming in to play a sport like roller derby, which is sort of where I started, or whether they just want to be like fitter. But there's, it's so cool to see these women like go from where I think you and I were very much at, especially growing up, of like, well, I'm just trying to be smaller. I'm just trying to be thinner. I'm just trying to not be too bulky, to being like, you know what? I'm fucking strong. Like, I can't, like, I want to track how much stronger I can get, and then seeing like how it relates into their lives. And I think for a lot of women too, building strength creates independence. Wasn't there a woman, was it, I think it was in your book, or I'm making it up and I found it somewhere else, about the woman with like the 22 pounds of kitty litter or something like that?
That is in my book. Yes.
Can you tell us? They're so great. I was like, I love this so much.
Oh my gosh. She is one of my favorite people, honestly. So I was in Iceland running a Spartan race at the last minute. It was a journalistic assignment. And so, you know, 3 days beforehand, I find out I'm going to Iceland to cover this race. And I have the opportunity to run the sprint version of the course, which is still 7 miles. And it's on the side of a mountain in Iceland. And it's dark because it's December at the time. And the other competitors are mostly running for 24 hours, which is wild. But because I'd had this like base level of physical fitness, I was able to go there and do it and carry these heavy sandbags around. And I had a blast. It was great. And on the way back, I was on a layover in Chicago, and I struck up a conversation with this gentleman who was sitting near me, and he told me I should really meet his wife because she's really strong. And a few minutes later, she came back, and this is a woman in her 80s, and she starts telling me about how, you know, on her last birthday, her 81st birthday, she had deadlifted 121 pounds, and she was thrilled to tell me this story. And I loved it. The way she got into weight training was because she was in the store and there was a bucket of kitty litter on the shelf and she could not get it into her cart. And so she had to ask for help. And she was very upset about this. So she decided to do something about it. She didn't want to have to ask for help for things like that anymore. And so she went into a gym and they gave her some exercises to do to assess where she was at, and she was not able to get off the floor without assistance. She wasn't able to do a single sit-up, you know, and she was coming from decades of having not been particularly active. And, you know, within just weeks, she was able to turn that around and, you know, to actually work her way up to deadlifting and using a barbell. And it just absolutely lit up her face to share this with me. And I love her story in the book because I do profile a lot of elite athletes and their stories are super inspirational and amazing. But there is something to be said for an everyday woman who just gets out there and gets after it and is not going to be in any record books for how much she lifts, but how much has it changed her life to be able to do this? So she's a sweetheart, and it's so serendipitous that I happened to meet her when I had first started working on this book, and was so glad to be able to share her story. And she can now lift that cat litter. She helps other people in the store, she told me, and she made it her goal after that to be able to lift, you know, 50 pounds. And so she kept setting these different goals and just smashing them.
Oh my God. And it's so cool because I just feel like there's so many women out there that are maybe still like afraid of like trying to get strong or unsure, because I think as women too, we really want to, we don't, I mean, people in general, we don't want to look bad. We don't want to be seen as like screwing it up as we're trying. And so I think there's a lot of women out there that are afraid to even like get started because of like where they're at. Like, what would you say to those people?
Yeah, that is such a good point. And that's one thing that I think is really important for us to recognize, is that we do not give girls especially a lot of opportunities to fail. Yeah. People in general are afraid to fail, but girls especially are afraid to mess up. They're afraid to do something wrong. And this is something that we see starting to happen in puberty. And then it kind of just goes from there. And so you become more afraid of trying these things. So I think it's just important, if you are afraid, to realize that everyone starts somewhere and it is okay to mess up. You are going to miss a lift. You know, you are going to, at some point, your progress is going to stall or whatever happens, but the weight room or whatever sport you or activity you pursue, that is where you can make these, that's where you can try new things, and push yourself and see what you're capable of. And, there will be setbacks, and it doesn't always go in a linear way, but it's worth pursuing, because wherever you're starting from now, you can absolutely improve that, going forward, but not if you never try.
Yep. Yep. 100%. And I think that there's something to be said for, it's okay to do it without feeling prepared. Like, do it nervous. Yeah. Do it scared. Like, just show up, because I think that we don't realize that everyone around us is probably just as nervous and afraid and scared as we are. Like, how was it for you starting with like the, did you do bikini or did you do, figure?
I did bikini. I tried to do figure. So there's a good lesson there. You know, I kind of wanted to do figure, which, for people who don't know, in bodybuilding, there are different categories and there are slightly different looks for each category. And bikini is sort of the lowest level of muscularity, I guess. It has a particular look that you're going for. And figure, you're looking for more of a V taper in your back. You want wider shoulders. You need a little bit of a higher degree of muscularity. And, you know, I tried to get there and I just couldn't get my back to kind of fit the guidelines that they're looking for in that category. And so I did bikini. And yes, I think especially when I first started weight training, I had this idea that I need to get into shape before I go into this gym, which I think is a really common thing that people are like, okay, before I start this program, I'm going to get into shape first. And it's like, no, when you do the program, you will get into shape. That, don't worry, just start. So that's one thing I would say for sure. And yeah, when I started bodybuilding, I had been training for a couple of years, so I had this base level, but I had a long way to go. I trained for 9 months and I could have trained for longer, honestly. Yeah. So it was a long slog at times, because bodybuilding kind of takes over your life. Really have to change your lifestyle in order to train and compete. And a lot of times I felt like I wasn't getting anywhere, but fortunately I was taking photos every week, mm-hmm. and I was logging, you know, my workouts every week. And so I was able to look back in an objective way and see how far I had come. Because a lot of times we trick ourselves into thinking that we're not making progress when we do something, but I was able to see, no, you have progressed so much, even if it doesn't feel that way.
Yeah. Yeah. But the whole competition process is fascinating, man. I did a 6 month prep, and like, I ended up finishing, cause we did it in LA. I finished 9th out of 9 in my category, but it was something to be accomplished, because the level of discipline, I mean, I would never do it again. I don't know about you. Never again. Like, no freaking way.
Yeah. Same boat. I think one and done.
Yep. Marathons too. I think marathons for me were like a wanted, like, I'm going to do it. I ran across Catalina. It's like the 6th hardest marathon in the world. It's a trail run. It's like 20, or was it like 4,000 feet of elevation gain on the way in, and then 4,000 feet on the way out. And it's just, awful, but to like do it, you know, and then to like really be able to be like, you know what, I trained for it. I learned disciplines in the process. I learned what my body can do. And like coming out on the other side of it, I feel like you do end up with a lot of sort of unexpected skills of like mental endurance, you know?
Absolutely. I think that is definitely a thing that you get out of training. And I try to make that connection in the book that physical strength, it's not just about seeing how fast you can run or how much weight you can lift. It really ties into all other aspects of your life. And that's how you build mental strength and emotional strength and spiritual strength. Like these things are all interconnected. And if we try to separate out physical strength, that doesn't make sense because it's all feeding each other. Mm-hmm. But I just want to say 4,000 feet of elevation, like loss is, I mean, up is one thing, but down, people don't realize how hard down is. That sounds hard.
Down was awful. And there was, I mean, it's literally like you kind of do this on the way up, but it is just this on the way down. It's like the last part. You think you finally finish like getting to the bottom of the elevation with maybe like a mile and a half to go. And like that deceleration on your quads is just absolutely wretched. Like at one point I just kind of gave up and just started like kind of like free falling my way down the hill, like the road runner with my legs. I was just so, I didn't even really train for it. I trained for all the uphill and it didn't even occur to me to like really hardcore train for the downhill. And I was wrecked for months. I mean, just months.
I can imagine. Yeah. I ran my marathon on flat ground and I lost half my toenails from it. So. I don't even want to know what would happen to me if I ran that one.
Oh my God. I'll take hills over flat ground anyway, any day. Like I just actually, here in Costa Rica, I've been running here, but I just ran hills for the first time. I did 5.5 miles of hills like 2 days ago. And I woke up yesterday and my hips were like, what the fuck did we just do? But it's so good. So what do you feel like? And I think what you said is really important about like the mental strength that you build along the way. Like with my crew, we actually just finished like this 7-day challenge we do quarterly. And on the last day, I always challenge them to do 100 burpees for time. And I tell them, I'm not having you do 100 burpees for time because I want to see how fit you are. I'm telling you to do 100 burpees for time because it's a cheat sheet for where your brain goes when anything in your life gets hard. This is how you react. And if you can start to learn what that voice sounds like and what it says when things are hard, then you can start to like work around it or shift it or change the reaction to like hard things. And I just really believe like fitness is, like you said, it's such a place where like we can learn how to, what is her name? She wrote Glennon Doyle, her thing about like, we can do hard things. Like, I think fitness is such a great place to learn that we can do hard shit, you know?
Absolutely. No, I love that burpee challenge. That burpees are 100% mental. I mean, yes, they're physical, but they are so mental because you do like 10 of them and then you're like, I'm done. I'm out. and it's really what your mind tells you after that determines, what happens next.
Oh, 100%. It's just the willingness to do one more, even when just one more, don't think about the rest. Just like one more. So for you now, like, I mean, do you still, you know, I think, and I think that we all do, but like, what do you still, in terms of like your relationship to your own body, you know, like you've done the bikini competition, you've, you know, been doing the marathons and the Spartan races and like all of this stuff. Like, how do you still have like the nagging voices in the back of your head that you like, do you have them? Do you still listen to them? How do you interact with them?
Yeah, good questions. I do still have the nagging voices in my head. I mean, I wish I could say I didn't. I think they've changed over the years, which is great. I put a lot more, I have a much healthier relationship with my body in terms of appreciating it for what it does. I mean, it's kind of a miracle that it has all these, just think of all these processes going on in our bodies all the time. Like it's incredible what they can do and what they're capable of. And so I definitely have more gratitude for it than I ever have before. but I still grew up in the same society that I always grew up in. I still have these messages that I got from a very young age, you know, and I still get comments from people. And so I still, you know, am hard on myself sometimes if I can't do something that I think that I should be able to do, or if my body doesn't react in a way that I want it to react. But I think it's just acknowledging that, yes, we have these messages, but the things that our brains are telling us are not always true. And we can sort of, you know, work through those and acknowledge the thoughts, but those thoughts don't have to become who we are.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Because I feel like they do. They just, they, at least for me too, like they're kind of always there, you know, and I kind of view them like a toddler. Like if you're in a room with a toddler and it's like playing on the floor, like you don't necessarily have to listen to the toddler. It might be talking all the time. I mean, you probably right. don't want to listen to what the fuck is. I'm like, okay, like, all right, little voice chattering about the fact that I have some cellulite on my thighs. Like you can just sit over there in the corner and I'm just going to let you do that. I'm just going to choose not to participate and like carry on with my life.
Yeah. You know? No, I like that analogy. Definitely.
Do you have any new fitness projects coming up? Is there anything you're working on or what are you doing?
That's a good question. And I feel like I should have something epic that I'm working on, but it's been difficult during the pandemic, as for so many people. I just don't have access to as many opportunities to train for things as I once did. So one thing I'm working on now, which is a smaller goal than a lot of the things I've done in the past, but I'm on day like 14 right now of a splits challenge. And so every day I take an hour long flexibility class focused on being able to do the front splits and the middle splits. And I have worked on flexibility kind of off and on over the years, but it's never been something that's been a big focus of mine. And I've never been naturally super good at it. So it reminded me when you were talking of the burpee challenge, it's really a mental thing to hold these poses and to even just do the class sometimes, because I'm doing my regular weight training workouts as well. And so then I'm doing this kind of on top of it. Sometimes I'm super tired. You know, we're starting to hold these stretches for a long time, like 5 minutes in some cases. That is, 5 minutes seems like nothing. It's a super long time when you are, you know, we're working at a level of like 8 or 9 out of a 10 in terms of like, how much are you, what are you feeling in your body right now in terms of this stretch? And that is a long time to sit in a stretch that feels like that for you. So it's a mental exercise, you know, how do I react when I am feeling this way? And how does that carry over into other areas of my life? And I get a lot of time to think about that on the yoga mat in the middle of these stretches. And I love it. I love it because I've always loved setting these challenges. I haven't been able to do one in a while because of life circumstances. And so it's both of a comfortable and a super uncomfortable place for me to be, but I know that it benefits me so much in other areas. So I'm enjoying it for that reason.
Yeah. And that's cool too, because I think what you said about like, well, it's like a smaller thing, like it's not so epic. And I think so many people think that if they're working on their health, it needs to be something that's like massive and epic. Yeah. And sometimes it's just like, well, no, I'm going to focus on my flexibility. Flexibility is so not glamorous and it's so important.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah. There are so many dimensions of health and well-being, and you know, there are ones that are sexier than others that get the glory, but there are a lot of different aspects that go into being well-rounded, and it's worth working on all of them.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. What are you doing writing project wise? Are you working on anything right now?
Right now I have just mostly been working on promoting the book. So that's where I'm focusing my efforts and, trying to write things related to women and physical strength and fitness and feminism and all of these issues that I've had a chance to explore in the book, because I've realized I love them so much. And these are endless conversations. There is so much to be said in this space. And I've met other authors who've said things like, "Oh, I was so sick of my book by the time I was promoting it," because, you know, for people who don't know, there are usually years before the book even comes out that you're working on it, whether it's doing the research for it, writing the proposal, finding an agent, then finding an, you know, your agent finds an editor, a publishing house to buy it. And it's a long process. And then it takes a while to write the book. And then it takes a while for the book to come out. And then you promote it. And it's a long cycle. But the idea that, you know, you would be tired of your book by the time it comes out, I have never felt that way, because I love these issues and I love getting the chance to talk to people about them. And I could have written a whole nother book with just the research that I wasn't able to fit into this one. So I think there's still a lot to be done and a lot to be said in this area. And so that's what I'm still focused on.
Nice. Did you find that inside of writing the book, you applied some of these sort of like mental fitness, like the things that you learned in fitness, were they super applicable to like the book writing process?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah. I mean, I think so. Sometimes it's just about like sitting down and getting it done. And I find the same thing with, you know, fitness sometimes. Like it's just about putting on your clothes and your tennis shoes. And once you do, then you'll work out. Like you could tell yourself, just go and, you know, just run 1 mile or just do 15 minutes of whatever. And then you'll finish your workout. You will definitely finish your workout. And it's the same with like sitting down to work on the book. I find that I often procrastinate on things that are really important to me. I think that's a common thing. If something is if it matters to us, then we sometimes avoid it because, you know, we're worried that it's not going to turn out the way we want or whatever messages we're telling ourselves. And so with the book, at first it was like, oh my gosh, this book is so important to me. Like, am I going to write it the way I want to? And what am I going to do? But I had a lot of discipline with it. A lot of it was kind of like training for the bodybuilding show, where you just kind of have to set your day up for success by putting, you know, by meal prepping and scheduling the time that you're going to work out and, you know, setting up all your water bottles for the day or whatever it might be. And I did the same with the book. I knew where I was going to go. Mm-hmm. I knew every day what section I wanted to work on. And so I set up these, I made it easy for myself to work on it. And of course, you know, if I found something else I wanted to explore, I would go off and do that. But by having that framework set up and having a place to go, I had an office at a library, which was really nice. I was able to use that discipline that I've cultivated in areas like fitness and get the book done.
Nice. It was like your book gym.
It was my book gym. Yeah. Yes.
You gotta have a book gym.
Yes, and I had my water bottles there, and I was all set right up.
You gotta make sure you're eating the right food so that when you come in, that you're like ready to write. You know, you can't just eat pancakes and go write a book. Your brain won't work, you know?
That's true. Yes, that's science right there.
That is science with a capital S. All right, so at the end of every podcast, we like to do a top five list. So Haley and I are doing a top five list. It's kind of a different top five list, but since we have parallel lives, we thought it would be fun to basically share our number one lesson that we've learned from the top five things that we've both done. So we'll basically go back and forth. So it's kind of like merging into traffic. So like you go, I'll go, you go, I'll go. So, okay, you go ahead for the first one.
Okay, my top five lesson from running a marathon. This is super cliche, but sometimes it's just about putting one foot in front of the other.
Dude.
Because I ran the marathon, I trained for it at a challenging time in my life. I had some things going on and I didn't get the chance to train necessarily the way I wanted to, but it was just about getting out there every day, trying to follow the plan to the best of my ability. And then on actual race day, just keep going. Eventually you will cross the finish line as long as you keep moving. So put one foot in front of the other.
Yeah. Yeah. If you don't fall flat on your face and stay there, you'll eventually.
That's true. There could be reasons why you wouldn't finish. That does happen sometimes, but I was still standing. So I was able to finish.
So great. It's so great. So my marathon lesson was that the rest is equal, if not more important than the work. Because I have always been like, at that point in my life, anyways, I was much of a, like, I'll sleep when I die, go hard or go home, 6 days a week at the gym plus roller derby practice kind of thing. And so for me, it was really learning to only run 3 days a week when I wanted to run like seven. And so for me, I had to really learn rest. I actually ended up, I had been training all on trail because it was a trail run. Mm-hmm. And my first 20 mile, one of my final runs, I was like, oh, I'll just go run it on the street in Long Beach. And I ran 20 miles of asphalt, zero asphalt training, and totally fucked up my IT band. I honestly didn't think I was going to be able to do the race.
Yeah.
And it seized up on me about halfway through the race. And I just started going, I love you. We're going to make it. I love you. We're going to make it. I love you. We can do this. And like, I got through to the end, but it was like, it was such a lesson. Sort of, that was a divergent version of it, but like, I really did learn that, like, I had to rest 3 days a week. That was it. And I did, you know, you can run a marathon if you only do it 3 days a week, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
That's Sweet. A great lesson.
Yeah. Yeah. We're passing these on to our listeners so that they can learn from us.
Well, there was a good self-talk lesson in there too. I like that. It was like a bonus lesson.
Which came from all the burpee work, right? From doing the hard things in fitness for so long and learning how to be my own, you know, support system. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Sweet. All right. What you got for the next one? STP.
STP. My lesson here is that things you're afraid of can be more fun than you might imagine. Mm. So I always had kind of a mental block with riding a bicycle because I was one of the last people in my class to learn to ride a bike. And I remember I felt embarrassed about that when I was younger. And I mean, I was six, so it's not like I was super old when I was riding a bike, but I felt like it was something that I wasn't good at. Yeah. And so I've ridden a bike over the years, but I've always felt like it was something that I wasn't very good at. So training and riding the 206 miles, it ended up being a lot of fun. I loved meeting all of the people along the way. It's a really fun event where people come out from these small communities and offer you baked goods and a place to sleep and spaghetti to eat, and they cheer for you and ring bells. And it was just, I loved it. I had such a good time. And from a physical standpoint, it was not as challenging as some of the other things I've done, but it was a mental hurdle for me just because of that relationship that I had with bike riding. So sometimes you can avoid something for a long time for no reason. And so I learned that, you know, those things that I'm scared of can end up being really great.
Nice. And are you a bike rider now? Like, have you continued with bike riding, or was that kind of like, well, I did it, like, I'm out?
I still have my bike and I do ride it sometimes. And I've always enjoyed riding bikes when I'm visiting places, new places. Not that I've had the opportunity to do that much lately, but it's a great way to see, a new town that you go to or, whatever. So I still typically will take a bike ride wherever I'm traveling.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. It's such a great way to see towns because it's so slow and it's such a fun way to explore, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. For me, mine was kind of the flip side. So I did the STP when I was 11. I mean, we were training for this thing every weekend, whether we wanted to or not. It like poured the entire Seattle to Portland, like the whole thing just dumped. I mean, we got to Portland and it was like flooded. And after that, like at 11, I was like, I'm done. Not interested in riding a bike. I don't want anything to do with it. And I think we put that Bianchi bike away and I didn't see it again until maybe like midway through high school. And I really like my lesson in this is if you overdo something, to maybe like come back, like don't like allow the burnout to like burn the bridge. Cause I definitely burnt myself out on bicycle riding. And I remember halfway through high school, my dad was selling stuff and he was like, I'm going to sell your bike. You haven't been on it in like legitimately like 5-6 years. And I remember getting on it in our apartment complex parking lot and riding it around and going, dude, this is so great. And like, why did I ever stop riding a bike? And then I rode my bike everywhere with like all of my friends. And so for me, it's like definitely, you know, it's easy, especially in fitness, to like burn ourselves out on something and yes. We overdo it to the point where we don't love it anymore. So one, it's obviously, you know, monitoring your burnout, but also like, don't be afraid to come back to shit just because you like overdid it at some point.
Right. Yeah.
Nice. Surfing.
Surfing. For me, not everything will happen on the first try. The time I tried it in Costa Rica was incredibly frustrating. Mm-hmm. I burned myself on the board. I was drinking seawater. I had been taken to this intermediate place to surf when I was a beginner. I had never done it before. So I was just kind of set up to fail a little bit. And that's another story. But, you know, it didn't happen. But then I went back and took another surfing lesson. And this time I was able to do it. I stood up, I rode a few waves. And so if I had let that first experience be the only one that I had, mm-hmm. I would have never gotten the chance to try it again. And I do think it's a cool activity and I would like to try it more in the future. But, you know, not everything is going to come naturally to you and not everything is going to work out the way that you hope it will on the first try.
Yeah. You gotta be shitty before you can be good, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah. And mine was surfing, which I feel like I have very much brought into the rest of my life, is that the sets always pass. Like when you're paddling out into the green water, like you always pray on your way out there that there won't be a set coming in on your head. And like, cause it's like, if you're paddling out and you see a set coming, you're like, oh God. And they break on you and they break on you and they break on you and you get shoved underwater and it feels like it's going to last forever. And you're like coming up for air and you're choking on salt water and you have to go back under and you can't breathe. It's fucking awful. And when I first started surfing, I was always convinced I was going to die. Like I was sure that I was going to die. And now like I've come to this point where I get to the point where I can be like, the sets will always pass. Like this is going to pass. Like just know, like it's impossible for waves to keep coming like this for the rest of the day. Like just, there can't be more than 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of these suckers. So it's like, just count them. Like, because at some point it's going to mellow out and it's going to be a flat ocean and you're going to be able to paddle out. And I think that that just applies to like all areas of life where like when shit is hard, like if the first place we can go is, this is going to pass. Like this is going to pass. There will be a point where it will be calm and it will be okay. Like it can't be like this forever. And I think even right now, like in the time of COVID, as much as this feels like the longest set of set waves crashing on all of our fucking heads, like yes. I feel like deep down inside, I'm like this, it will pass. It has to, it is impossible to continue on like this forever. And also on the flip side of that, that it's not always going to be flat and easy forever either. Like, so when things are good, also really appreciating them, because the other side of it is you're going to get some waves dumped on your head at some point, you know?
Absolutely. And the time to prepare for that is when things are calm. Cause if you can build up that resilience, yep. You know, when things are going well, you'll just have that in your toolbox when those waves come.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What did you get for bikini competition?
Whew, I got a lot of lessons from this. It's hard to narrow it down. I'm going to go with, you can't always rely on motivation, because motivation comes and goes, but discipline is a daily choice. Yes. So if you commit to something like a bikini show, you are not going to want to wake up every morning for fasted cardio or to weigh your almonds that you're eating or to... Yeah, for sure. Or to go and get that 90-minute weight training session in, or to go to posing practice, or whatever it is. But if you have set this up as your goal and you've got that discipline, that will carry you through. I'm going to add a second one though.
Yeah.
And my second lesson is not every goal is for everyone. So mm-hmm. I would not necessarily recommend bodybuilding mm-mm. to everyone. There are a lot of reasons why it might not be the goal for you. And so whenever people ask me, and that applies to any goal, right? Running a marathon might not be for you. Doing the STP might not be for you. And that's okay. You don't have to have the same goals as someone else or do the same things. And you should make sure that your goals match up with you.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's a really important one. Like I encounter that a lot here with surfing, because like right now the waves are huge and everyone's like, you got to get out there. And I'm like, that's not why I don't surf to like get my ass hammered when it's huge. Like that's not my goal.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes we see other people and their goals and we want to like, oh, well they're doing it, so I should want to do that too. And it's like, you're right. Like bikini competitions are not for everyone. And
no,
not even a little bit, but awesome. So for me, my bikini competition lesson was faith in the process. It was definitely one of those things where it was like, okay, like I'm trusting my coaches. I'm trusting the process. I'm not even going to like question it, you know, on the week to week. I'm showing up. I'm doing the work. I'm doing, you know, the numbers in terms of the weight, in terms of the calories, in terms of the measurement. Like I'm just going to keep showing up with faith in the process, because so many people have done it before me. And it was one of those first times where it was like, I'm not going to overanalyze it. I'm just going to do the thing that I'm told to do for the next 6 months and see where we end up.
That's a great one, because it is hard to have faith in the process. When it's a long process, like, you know, you prepped for 6 months, it's a long time to, having this lifestyle change to believe, especially if you don't see those changes happening quickly. So that's a good one.
Yeah. Awesome. Sweet. Okay. Final one, writing.
This one's tough for me because it's something I've done all my life, something I do every day. But for me, I think my lesson from writing is that sometimes it's nice to lean into what you love to do. Mm. I have always loved to write. When I run into people who I haven't seen in a long time, who I grew up with, they usually assume I became a writer. It's always been a way I've enjoyed expressing myself. Mm. And that is, you know, it's a path that I followed and I'm glad that I did. I spend a lot of time in my hobbies tackling weaknesses and things that I'm not great at and things that I want to improve at. And there's a lot to be said for that. But don't forget your strengths too. And don't forget about doing things that bring you joy and things that you love to do, because there is value in that as well.
Yeah. Yes. And I, you know, for me, like writing has always been something, same thing, right? It's always been a strength of mine, like creative writing classes, things like that. And mine ended up sort of in this, you know, millennial age that we're in, like social media has been my outlet. I mean, I've written a long form post a day for almost consecutively like the last 7 years. And the biggest thing that I've really learned is vulnerability. And I've learned that writing has really taught me that whatever I'm going through, like I'm not a special butterfly, and that usually whatever it is that I'm writing about, I'm writing because it's like what I need to hear. And I just put it out there for everyone else. And what I find is people are like, oh my God, like I feel like you're inside my head today. You know, and so for me, like writing has really taught me to be vulnerable. I feel like it's taught me that really like the collective is so much more similar than we realize. So it's actually just been a really magical way for me to connect to other people and understand that we're not all that different.
Yes, absolutely. I love using writing as a way to connect with others. And as you mentioned, if it's something on your mind, and it's something affecting you, there are absolutely other people out there who will feel the same way and who will get value from your words.
Yes. Awesome. Yes. Well, speaking of value, I hope that everyone listening has gotten a ton of value from this. This has been such a fun podcast to record. Haley, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time. For those of you guys that are listening, if you found value in this, Haley, where can they find your book? Where can they find you? All the things.
All the things. Strong Like Her is available wherever books are sold, online or from your favorite indie bookshop is a great place to order it. And I am online at HaleyShapley.com, and my social media handles are all Haley Shapley. So you can find me on Instagram and Twitter. And thank you so much for having me on today to chat about women and fitness and all of the amazing trailblazers who've come before us and allowed us to even have this conversation today.
Yes, so cool. Standing on the shoulders of giants, you know. And I think that, you know, in Crash Course, we have a tagline, which is life is a contact sport. You know, she who touches the most lives wins. And I really want to acknowledge you because I feel like this book is a way to be touching a lot of lives and inspiring a lot of women to really, number one, to embrace their strength. Number two, to understand their heritage of where their opportunities for strength came from. I think that you were a pioneer in doing that. So thank you for being willing to do the work and create such an awesome book for everyone. So you guys, when you read the book, please let us know. Tag Haley, tag me, share your golden nuggets. There's so much good shit in that book. Send this to anyone that you feel like would love to hear more about it. You know, share what you love with where you love, the people that you love. That didn't make sense, but we're gonna go with it. I love you guys, and we'll see you later.